Welcome. So happy to have you all here this evening to join us in conversation with Betty Price. I just want to make one announcement about the magazines. After our conversation with Betty, then you can take your purchase your magazines at the counter, and then we will sign them. That's from the announcement from the manager. Okay, great. Just want to give a little intro on Betty and on George Nelson. Can you all hear me? You said it's working, right? You happy?
Can you raise it?
How's that? Is that better?
Yes.
Much better? How's that? Okay. This is a little intro about Betty. Born in Saginaw, Michigan, Betty Betcher Price was destined for a life in retailing. Betty's 50-year career at her Lieberman store in Lansing, Michigan, was marked by her ability to recognize outstanding designers at the beginning of their careers, her willingness to search all over the world for the best work, and her dedication to educating her customers through workshops and one-on-one exchanges. From her home base at Lieberman's in Lansing, Betty Price has been one of the most influential and most successful of all retailers in spreading the word about modernist design in the Midwestern marketplace and beyond. Even at 22 in 1936, just 1 year after graduating from Michigan State University, Betty Price relied on her own taste in choosing items for Lieberman's on her many buying trips to New York. She remembers, "I purchased the Russell Wright American Modern Dinnerware. We were one of the first ones in the country to have it." By the time Betty saw the 1940 MoMA, that's Museum of Modern Art, exhibition, Organic Design in Home Furnishings, which featured the work of Charles Eames and Eero Saarinen, she was already an enthusiast of modern design. In 1947, her ongoing search for well-designed home furnishings led her to the first of many collaborations with designer and architect George Nelson when he designed the lower level of Lieberman's at 107 Washington, by then dedicated entirely to gift merchandise and furniture chosen by Betty. In 1952, Nelson drew up plans that were not realized for the new luggage floor at 107 Washington, but in 1965, he designed and outfitted a completely new separate Lieberman's at 113 Washington. The collaboration and friendship between Don and Betty Price and George Nelson continued well into the 70s, when Nelson entirely renovated Lieberman's at 107 Washington. The 1947 blueprints for remodeling the lower floor of the store at 107 Washington, Nelson's first collaboration with Don and Betty, showed shelving designed by Nelson and produced for him by Aluminum Extrusions Company right here in Charlotte, Michigan. So we have there's a Midwestern vibe here. He would later license the design to Herman Miller as the Omni Modular Shelving Unit. And many of you are going to be familiar with Omni. Finally, Betty was able to commission Nelson to design an entire store when she opened the new Lieberman's at 113 Washington Avenue in 1965. She was so proud of that, Betty and Don's great achievement. It remains the only retail store that George Nelson ever designed. The cost, for his design services and trips to Lansing, and for Herman Miller fixtures, interior and exterior materials, and construction work, came in at the staggering sum of $25,774.99. For the entrance of the store, George Nelson designed a dramatic facade of 4 22-foot-high glass panels set back about 4 feet from the sidewalk, with slate walls on either side, following his conviction that a store's identity should be conveyed by the architecture. The signage was purposely low-key, only about 2 feet high, and placed at eye level. Just a little bit more. Inside, a balcony was set back about 8 feet from the entrance, and we all remember this, accessed by a large open staircase. Betty and George Nelson, both drawn to Japanese aesthetics, decided to turn the potential dead space under the stairs into a Japanese garden with an arrangement of rocks, small stones, and unusual plants. Great memories there. In one of the first applications of comprehensive storage system shelving, CSS, in the country, Nelson cantilevered CSS tracks from the wall so the shelf height could be adjusted to accommodate any size merchandise. Herman Miller, by then Nelson's main manufacturer, would send Japanese tour buses from Zeeland, Michigan to Lansing on a regular basis to see the store's unique design features. And I think right now in Tokyo there are hundreds of photos of Lieberman's all over Tokyo. They must be there. George Nelson's last project for Lieberman's came in 1972, when he renovated the facade and interior of the luggage store at 107 Washington. A large recessed L, prominently featured on the front of the facade, illuminated the building at night. And there is a photo, a beautiful color photo of that facade in the issue of Modernism magazine. Through her work at Lieberman's for over 5 decades, Betty Price helped spread an understanding and an appreciation of modernist design throughout Michigan, the Midwest, and beyond. And at this time, I would like to introduce none other than Betty Price. I'm trying to move this over a little bit, and then we're going to have a little... I have a few questions that I'm going to ask Betty. Betty and I got together for several months, and I did about 90-minute cassette tape interviews with Betty, and we talked about her life, and this article in Modernism is about 8 pages, but I think we talked about 50 pages worth. So I don't know what happened to the watch. Okay. Just want to start with Betty. You have a philosophy about the way you treated your customers at Lieberman's, and I just thought that was a perfect place to start. Can you tell us a little bit about that philosophy? Because it's just something that's, that I noticed, because I from the moment I walked into Lieberman's in 1971 looking for a gift, a wedding gift for my husband's best friend, you made a lifelong customer out of me, just the way you welcomed me into your store. And I just was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, it wasn't a job. It was an opportunity to find the best piece of merchandise for each customer that came in. I was given the opportunity, and that's just part of it. I love the business, and instead of teaching, I decided I was going to be in the store with my dad. And, of course, my dad was delighted because I was the only girl. We had boys, and I was the only one that decided to go into the business with Daddy. And, of course, he thought he had one of the angels because, number one, because I really wanted to do it. And I could do it very well.
That you certainly could. And, you know, I always had the feeling walking into your store from that very first day when James and I came there for the gift that we were really guests.
You were. Anybody that walked through that front door was a friend, and we were delighted to have them come. Regardless of anything about their appearance, we just felt very lucky to have people come in through our door and be exposed to the things that we had looked carefully to find, so that we had the best in the country that we could give and show and sell to a customer.
And, you know, it wasn't about that individual purchasing the most expensive gift. You had a nice range of things, and you wanted to find the gift that was appropriate for that individual.
That's right.
We wanted to show a collection of things, especially in the handbag department, where people would come. Back in those days, they bought many, many more handbags. But that's a very beautiful one. Top grain colored leather. That goes on forever. And if you brought that into my store right now, I'd get my saddle soap out and go over it and give it another little shot in the arm so it would look beautiful for several more years.
I take good care of them, Betty.
Yes, I know you do. I can tell from here.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Betty. I just can't tell you how much I enjoyed being there with you as your customer. So, today, George Nelson is known all over the world as one of the most influential designers and architects of the 20th century. But when you first hired him, he was not nearly so well known. What was it that you saw in George Nelson that made you want to work with him when he was still relatively unknown? I know there were some really special qualities there. Could you tell us about a few of those?
Well, he was extremely talented to start with. And he was recognized as being a very talented artist. And I liked him for that, if for nothing else. And that's the beginning. And most of the people who are artists and are given an opportunity to show what they can do, that's how you really bring out the best in them. And it made no difference to us whether it was a man, a woman, or whatever. Anybody that was interested in doing really beautiful work, I was right there to enjoy it and let them know that they were appreciated.
Nelson was ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Yes.
Was
that?
Very much so. And he was out of his water, too. Mm-hmm. He lived in the East, mm-hmm. and he came to East Lansing and also to, was it Clare, one of the
Zealand.
Small towns?
Oh, was it Zealand?
Mm-hmm. Zealand.
He went to Charlotte, too, didn't he?
He became involved with quite a few people in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
in some of the smaller communities. But that was at the very beginning.
At the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't see his things wherever you went, right?
No. He needed help in getting exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And he got it.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that came into our store with something that they had made or designed that I thought was quality and would be something very good from the standpoint of sales, because you have to sell it. It had to meet certain standards of design and quality, and before we became excited about it.
And his and George Nelson, of course, met those standards and exceeded them.
Yeah.
In 1947, he renovated the lower level. And before 1947, what was the lower level like before George Nelson renovated it?
Ordinary. We needed somebody who had the judgment and the ability to make a better section in our store. And one of the great things about my dad, I usually talked to him about the things that I thought we should be doing, but if I never said a word to him about it, he didn't feel that I was infringing on his territory. Actually, he thought I was doing pretty well.
And you know, was it mostly wardrobe trunks down there before? Wasn't it that, you know, people were starting to fly, and how did that change things?
Well, it was when people first started to fly. Then we had to do something with all those trunks we had, because people, when they take a summer trip, they take a big wardrobe trunk with all the clothing in it, and it was a real hardship to have that when you're going to get on an airplane and have it weighed and measured and everything else. So it didn't take us long to change the whole community,
mm-hmm.
because you saw how fast the buses and cars for people who were taking trips,
mm-hmm.
they just sort of went by the wayside.
Yeah, the wardrobe trunks and things that you had downstairs. So it was really time for George Nelson to step in and do that renovation, put the wardrobe trunks in storage, right?
Yeah.
Right, right. That's wonderful.
When he came to town, we'd always invite him to have dinner with us. And we talked about everything under the sun. And discussed all the designs and designers in the country. It was always an education for us to have time to spend with him. And we'd always invite him for dinner. My mother was a wonderful cook.
You were a wonderful. You were a wonderful cook too.
And so we'd have dinner. And then Don and whoever happened to be with us that night.
Don would be there. And he and George got to be pretty big buddies, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us about that. Tell us about evening with Don and George. Tell us about that.
Well, of course, they talked about everything under the sun, starting with politics and going right through the whole line. And George would get tired. And we have radiant heat in our floors. And he happened to come when we had it on during the winter. And it was just slightly warm. And he and Don would start talking after dinner. And he'd lie on the floor.
This would be George Nelson lying on the floor?
Yeah.
Okay. I have to get a picture of this because, you know what, George Nelson never went to my house, so, I mean, this is, like, totally unique.
Well, they talk all night. And here was this nice, warm floor. He'd start talking to Don about everything under the sun.
Wonderful.
And he'd lie down on the floor. I'd look at this and I'd say to myself, I'm going to bed. And so, well, not only did I want to, but I had to, because it was time to get up in the morning and come to work.
Thank you. So, but now, a little about George Nelson as an individual. Like you've told me, you know, we know he was bright and we know he was well educated.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you'd like to tell us about him?
He liked good food. And we loved to have him come.
Well, he wasn't a boastful person, though. He wasn't a boastful person.
No, he wasn't boastful at all. And that was one of the reasons that Don was able to, well, they talked about so many different people and so many different things.
But he was never arrogant?
Never. Mm-hmm. No. No reason for him to be arrogant. He came to have dinner in our beautiful home.
Mm-hmm.
And good food. And why would he?
Well, you know, one thing you told me that stuck with me, and I made a little note here, it said, when you worked with George Nelson, you weren't testing things because you didn't have the money or the time to test so many things. He had already tested them, and he brought them to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and we loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were eager to have him come and have dinner with us so we could have time to discuss all kinds of things.
Now, tell us, remember the logo, when he saw your logo, your old logo, what he thought of that? That's one example, when he was so gracious about your logo, and he didn't like it very much, but he never said anything.
Well, he didn't think that the design was up to what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And in a very decent, gentlemanly way, he got us to get rid of it. And we were just lucky. And somebody like this realizes what situation we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees that we see that we better change that logo.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in a very gentlemanly way, gets it changed.
Yeah, very nice. And that's the logo. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the logo on all the Lieberman's bags.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have anything from Lieberman's, George Nelson did design that logo, and it's there today.
I don't think he even charged. I think he just did it.
He didn't even charge. He just did it.
Yeah.
He was that kind of guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really great.
That's a
great memory there. So, you say in the article that you trusted your judgment as a buyer for the store since Lieberman's was always able to sell what you purchased. What was your philosophy in picking out items to be sold at Lieberman's? What kind of items?
You don't mean like a wardrobe trunk?
No, darling. What I'm saying is that I know they had to be top quality, and I just wanted you, because you've talked about that so many times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, everything had to be top quality. And we gave it the tests in every way, because we would be ashamed to let a customer walk away with a piece of luggage, for instance, that would fall apart before we got up to the store. And we were more interested in making sure that every customer got the perfect, exact piece of merchandise that they should have had. It was very interesting when you'd see a student come in to get their wardrobe trunk to take to school. Because back in those days, if you didn't have a trunk and you went away to school, what were you? But that didn't last forever either, because about the time I started Michigan State, and that was the time when...
1931.
Yeah.
1931.
Yeah. And anybody that came to school with a wardrobe trunk had to work hard to find a place to put it. Once they got it to the dormitory, what do they do with this great big gigantic thing?
Now, the thing, one thing you said to me, and I made a little note here, that your things had to be top quality, they had to be usable, they had to look good, but it was more than just about making money.
Oh,
for
yeah.
You.
It was important that we make enough to stay in business, but the most important thing when we went out to buy was to find the best piece of merchandise and the best, not just the best looking one, but the one that was going to go on for years and answer all the needs of the customer. And we were there. No matter what might happen to it, they knew we were going to be right there behind that glass counter and take care of any problem that a person might have.
You stood by your merchandise. And you were an educator with your customers and your sales staff.
Yes.
I know you did workshops, you did seminars, you brought in designers and people like Bjorn Winblad, and you brought in the people from Rosenthal, and you brought in the people from WMF Fraser.
Yeah.
And every morning, was it every morning?
Yes.
For your sales staff, there's somebody here. Your sales staff, did you have a kind of a show and tell? Sure. Tell me a little about that. How did that work? Because you really trained people.
At 9 o'clock in the morning, I was on the floor with the samples of the new things that had just arrived the day before. Every piece of merchandise was shown to our people and showed them why we bought it and what it was going to do for the customer. And we would have other merchandise that was in the area to show our customers and to show our salespeople so they could see the difference between an ordinary piece of junk and something that was quality, that was worthwhile investing in. And from the time I was a little girl, I knew the difference between top grain and split. and I think our salespeople all had this kind of training. So when they got on the floor with a customer, they didn't feel embarrassed that they didn't know anything about it and didn't care, because they did care. And because we'd taken the time at 9 o'clock every morning sharp, they're there at the counter, and each piece of merchandise is shown why we bought it, why the price is, and all the other reasons why it landed in our store. And our people really appreciated it. Many of them were young students that had just come to work a few hours a week, but they appreciated the fact that we were taking the time to give them the backgrounds that made them feel comfortable and that they could do a good job. And I still feel that way.
So do we.
Thank you so much. And you had some personal favorites over the years. And you told me once that everything had to be something you wanted. You know, it's just like giving that gift that you wanted to keep for yourself, giving that gift. But you know, those everything there in that store was something that you would have wanted to take to your home. Yeah. And you talked about quality, usefulness, and being well designed.
Mm-hmm.
So important to you. And some of the names of that you loved. Russell Wright.
Oh, Russell Wright was one of the outstanding designs in the country. And in fact, every piece of merchandise I used to go to into Chicago when they had a big show, and I'd go from one room to the next and always greeted the salespeople because they might have a piece of junk there, but that doesn't mean that I had to be rude to them. And so each piece of merchandise was checked up here, and I'd smell it. This, you know, a nice piece of leather has a nice leathery smell to it. And all those things go into it, and it becomes a part of you. And my dad never said to me, you can only have so many dollars for such and such. I had to prove to my dad why I was paying such and such for certain things, that it was top grain cowhide leather and it was hand cut, and all the other things that went into a piece of merchandise. And in many instances, the artist's name went with it too, because many of the people that we did business with had reputations that were outstanding. And that isn't what always sold me. It sold me to look at it, but that didn't mean that it was always the one that I thought was the better value for the customer.
That's wonderful.
And the great thing is that I learned from my dad, but he never stood over me and said, you can't do this and you can't do that. He gave me freedom to find the best and the best value for our customers.
That's wonderful. Yeah, we've talked about Russell Wright, and we've already talked about George Nelson. You mentioned Edith Heath is a favorite of yours, Bjorn Winblad, then the W.M.F. Frazier. You talked about going to a factory in Germany, and you always wanted to see how things were made. And fabrics had to be timeless, not just this color or that color. So you were not looking for the trendy thing, but you went all around the world looking for
the best. The quality, the design that was timeless, the merchandise itself, like a piece of hide. You had to be careful that you picked out one that hadn't dried itself out to just a piece of junk. And you had to have enough time and experience in working with, for instance, leather hides. I always enjoyed going through the workshops where they took leather and tanned it. And the more you did this and you've got the feel of it. So when you invested in it, you were investing in the best to give your customer.
Thank you so much. You know, there's so many things we could talk about, I know that you were so, you were so at ease with being a woman in business. And it seemed that philosophy of, you know, your gracious manner, the way you respected your customers and the people that worked for you. I think you were a real fine role model for a woman in the business world.
Thank you. Wonderful. Love doing it. Mm-hmm. And I still love doing it. I'm still sewing.
That's right. And right now, what I thought we could do is open up the floor to questions from the audience. Now, I just want to say that I want to introduce Betty's son, Tom Price, who's on his own as an artist in his own right, a graphic designer, and just all kinds of great stories about time with Paolo Soleri and of course had met George Nelson and so many of the folks. And so we've got Tom here and Betty, and we'd like to take some questions from the audience.
So
right now we could talk about some of your favorites from Lieberman's over the years, or if there are any special memories that you'd like to share. And I see the hands go up, and I'm going to bring the mic over, and anything you'd like to share or any questions you have.
Thank you. I'm so happy to see you here tonight, Betty. When I was in high school, I had a babysitter salary, and I would take it to Lieberman's to do gift shopping for birthdays and Christmas for my family and friends. And you were there. You always were gracious to teenagers and others who would come in the store with not a lot of money, and you would find the perfect trinket. I bought, you know, German Christmas ornaments. I bought all kinds of things, and I just got to absorb the design elements in the store, and it just was always a very special place to go, and thank you for all of those memories. It was really terrific.
Thank you very much.
I was out of the area for many, many years, but when I would come visit, I would go to the East Lansing store, and I'd like to hear a little bit about how that came about. In East Lansing, you had a store there, right?
So, Tom, I don't know if you want to talk about that. I know the East Lansing store was not designed by George Nelson. Was it Mayotte and...
Local architects.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They were the local architects.
You want to say their names?
Mayotte, M-A-Y-O-T-T,
right.
And Webb. Mm-hmm. And some of you may know them because they're local architects.
Bernie Mayotte designed St. Thomas.
I didn't hear that.
I think it's Liz back there said that Mayotte and Webb designed St. Thomas. Is that the St. Thomas Aquinas School?
Yes,
uh-huh.
St. Thomas Aquinas School. The church.
They designed the church.
Yeah. So did you want to add anything there?
No,
the interior was all.
Whenever I go into, is it the Verizon store now? Is that what it is? I always see they have the great rear end there, and that's definitely Lieberman. So, did you want to say something?
Just
about that
the interior was all George Nelson Omni shelving that mm-hmm. they used, so it looked very Nelson like on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, the green slate, that slate wall.
We want to be on this. John Shaw is taping this for the MSU library, so we have to...
I also know that one of the themes and one of the things that Betty taught me when I was doing display there, merchandising and selling, at one point, kind of per diem for each of the stores, was that you had only a split second to catch somebody's eye as they walked past. Mm-hmm. And when I interviewed George Nelson for a school paper that I was doing, he said that's why there's that setback, is so that people could step into, up to, the window-to-window shop. And he did carry the green slate, at least at the downtown gift shop, from the outside of the wall into the first, the interior wall that was the Rosenthal studio. And that was a very important point that architecturally he pointed out to me as a questioning student back then. Thank you.
Didn't you go, this is Denise Dichter,
yeah.
Everybody?
Davis.
And didn't,
yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Three names. Denise Dichter Davis.
Denise Dichter Davis.
And Betty had to approve the guy.
Oh, my goodness. And Betty had to approve the guy. Approve
Davis,
the guy.
Davis, right.
Now, I know you went to University of Michigan to interview George Nelson, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Okay. That was great.
For a particular paper. He happened to be like a visiting prof in the architecture school, and I was studying historic preservation, and the project was to do a mock proposal to be put on the National Trust Historic Registry. And he made, it was a very formalized document. It was just pretending. He made me swear on my Italian grandmother's name that I would not proceed with this and actually submit it for designation as a historic site, because it was the only retail space that he had designed, that I would not take any real action with that information before he was no longer with us. So I had to promise him, and I did, and then we talked. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for that memory, Denise.
It was fun.
It's great.
I have a couple of commendations to give you. First off, my mother always spoke of Lieberman's. She had a very similar story about how when she was on a babysitter salary, she loved to come into Lieberman's and buy wallets and other trinkets. And takeaway from that, my mother always talked about Lieberman's and always pointed out the building as we were driving past when I was a child. And I wanted to point out to you that I feel that your fingerprint on Lansing has really been reflected throughout your exemplary taste in both the architects that you chose to work with, being George Nelson, and also how that has ultimately reflected on a younger generation. I'm a huge enthusiast of modern architecture because of those elements that I've seen growing up in an area where I think that we do have some great examples of modern architecture here in Lansing that are a little less known. So I want to thank you for that. And I was curious if you as well had any thoughts about how taste and preference can affect the quality of the way we perceive things and the way we create and etc.
Thank you very much. One of the things that I remember is the times that the teachers would bring a class into the store, and they would want us to show the different leather hides so the kids could see what a piece of luggage or a billfold or something else could be made out of this great big irregularly shaped piece of leather. And I loved doing it when the kids came, or if I took it out to the school, to show them what it looked like at the beginning and what a challenge it is for someone who's in this business to take a hide that's very irregular in shape and one that's properly tanned, and it had to be hand cut. It wasn't something that they could put under a cutting machine.
because it was so irregular. And they used to take I keep wanting to say a map, not a map, but a map.
A pattern.
Okay. Yeah. And they would put the pattern on the hide and move it around by hand so that they would get the most benefit out of a piece of hide. And it took a lot of skill to be able to get the maximum out of a leather hide. And we often would take groups of leather hides out to the schools and let them see what it looked like once it's tanned, but before they cut it.
And you were giving them an appreciation an understanding of things from the ground up.
Yes.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you for the exquisite gift wrap. I wish I had had the foresight to save some of the boxes. Well, no, because you didn't want to see what was inside, because you didn't want to mess with the gift wrap. It was too pretty. Thank you very much. It was just the topping after everything else. Excellent service, beautiful items. Thank you.
Jan Henderson there. Thank you, Jan. And that was one thing. Thank you for mentioning that, because we didn't get to talk about the gift wrap and that beautiful Bethel Tisch, who wrapped so many gifts, and the wonderful, that very artistically designed packages. And oh my goodness, there is a photo in the magazine of the packages that are beautifully wrapped.
Many of us have enjoyed over the years your jewelry shows at the Wharton Center. How did you get involved in those?
Thank you. Betty, we have a question about your jewelry shows, and so many people have enjoyed those jewelry shows. And we have a question. A member of the audience would like to know, how did you get started doing the jewelry shows? How did that come about?
Well, I think I'm having a hard time remembering how we started, but it obviously was to make an event worthwhile and to wrap something that somebody has chosen. And
talking about the jewelry shows at the Wharton?
Yes. Uh-huh. When somebody needs some extra money, we'll have a jewelry show, and we'll get the materials together and teach people how to do the tie-ons and to make it as nice as possible. And as far as I'm concerned, if I'm working for some group that needs help, financial help, there are ways of helping them.
And that's what you did with that. I don't know, Tom, did you want to add anything about the jewelry shows? Thanks.
Yeah, my mother started the jewelry business after my father passed away. And they'd moved out of the store, and she thought it would be a good way to raise funds for the Wharton Center, which she was instrumental in the beginning of, back when the Whartons were in town and Cliff Wharton was president. And over half of the proceeds would go to fund projects at the Wharton Center. This is a project that she undertook after the age of 75. So she sort of started a second business that is still operating today. The show was last Sunday, so that's a little bit of the background.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, we have a question. Anybody
Edinburgh over here.
Hi, this is Tina.
I can say it. I can talk pretty loud.
You want to move up? Because we're gonna you're gonna be on the.
Yeah, I know. I have it over here. On my
That's right. Good.
You Thank you.
As a woman in business so early, what were the biggest obstacles that you encountered in the 1950s and 60s?
Thank you.
Well, I didn't encounter them because I was raised with boys. And all my brothers were there, and it didn't they didn't bother me. Even if they insulted me, I wasn't bothered, because I just figure, well, we've got to overlook some things. But in general, I think if nothing, you want to give them a big smile at the beginning and think in terms of yes, it's better, it's good, and all the other things that are good. If you get out of bed and you feel ugly, you're just maybe have just not wanted to extend themselves. You can see why they would be so ugly when they get out. But if somebody's like that, just turn your head and think of something else, because there's always something else that's better there. But we loved our customers. We loved our salespeople. When anybody came into our store, even if they came in with an ugly look on their face and with a complaint, you still have to stand back with a smile and do whatever needs to be done to take care of them. Don't assume that it's their fault. Maybe something that they've ruined and they think that we should replace it. Well, how do you handle that? And you don't just assume that the customer is always right or wrong. And it takes a while to get to a point where you can draw a long breath and think, how do I handle it? And I hope I've always handled it well.
Well, you have. And her intellect and her confidence and her radiance always comes shining through. It always has. She's led an exemplary life, has a birthday coming up, November 4th, and we're just so honored and privileged to have been able to spend this time, this evening, with Betty, and right now we're going to be signing some magazines.
Can I say a little piece of
I'm sorry, we have one.
You go right ahead.
Because
Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
What was that? That sounds terrible. I worked for quite a while for Betty, and I must say that I have learned a lot from you. I came with a knowledge of antique German china and glass and stuff. Mm-hmm. You opened up my eyes to modern things. Mm-hmm. And you made me the kind of person when I'm in an elegant store and somebody wants to talk about something and the salespeople don't know a damn thing about what it is, I want to say, would you like me to help you? And I that's because of my training with Betty. And another thing that I don't know if you have talked about it, because I came in a little late, is you and another group of Lansing business people were teaching the people in the Orient what it was they should make that would be purchasable.
no, that people would buy, because they were making trashy things and wanted to sell them. And Betty and this group made them things that were quality and that people were buying. I remember you taught us that. I do remember that. And what else do I remember? When you had a small child with you, and the small child wanted to pick up something bloody breakable, and I would have a heart attack. Betty would say, let him pick it up and let it get broken. It's fine, you know. And that took a lot of everything. I mean, that was part of your character, Ipsos. I have learned an awful lot from you, Betty, and I'll, you know, and I shall always love you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I could talk about
thank you so much. And again,
something. Yes. I never can remember exactly how many years it is.